He recognizes that I'm after the good, just like my chaverim are after the good. Some of them may be unfortunate, and it's an unfortunate thing if a person doesn't really see the good. And the same emotions that he has, they have, and there will be an identification. And it will break down his air of superiority about himself, and it'll give him a tolerance and an appreciation for another human being, for another person, who will recognize that the animosities and the hatreds and this whole emotional reaction towards what he considers is terrible, how can he do this, is just really a projection onto his friend about certain ways that he feels about his own emotions. It's really a cover-up for his own emotions. That's really the truth of the matter. And then he'll be able to live on a much higher level in the Bein Adam L'Chaverah, which is a tremendously important area of perfection. I mean, as you know, as I'll say, yes, exactly. The word chet, she's right. The word chet really just means to miss. It comes from, it's a pasuk in Shmuel. Lachto es amata. Lachto means to miss the bullseye, miss the objective, the aim. Okay? So what it means is when a person's a chote, that the word chet really expresses that idea. Chote means he missed. That's it. Turn off the path. That's right. Turn off the path. You see the whole. That's really an important idea in Yadus, and it's something which a person should think about, because in our society we're trained emotionally to live in an emotional way. Yadus tries to raise you up a little bit higher to see beyond that, to be on a philosophical plane. If a person is fortunate enough to do that, will find that he eases tremendous tensions that they go through, people go through within themselves and other people. If a person would have that philosophical attitude, they'd reduce so much tension and stress that they experience in their own lives, and they'd get along so much better with the other people, and they'd have such a more peaceful life. I mean, it's, you know, the El Dvarim Shadam Achol Parasam Ba'olam Azev, I can't cancel on a bar. I mean, you have to think. You shouldn't try to. I think it's bad that people try to sell Yadus on the basis of Olam HaBa, when there's so much that a person can realize in terms of Olam HaZeh. Karen Kamis of Olam HaBa is fine, but other Mochel Persim of Olam HaZeh. I mean, you have to realize the benefits that a person would have, the Menuchas HaNefesh that a person would have from living properly according to the Torah in this world, right in the here and now. It's right in front of you. You don't have to think about what's going to be after a person dies. Yes. The whole story of Eve is the story of a person who went from a state where he couldn't accept reality to a state in which he did accept reality. That's the whole story of Eve. That was his cursing. The cursing was where he couldn't accept the reality. So that's what his wife said. Baruch Olakim Amos. Curse God and die. That's it. So it means you can't accept this. You can't accept this, and that's it. It's like a type of suicide. So, but in the end, the whole story is in the end how after all the arguments and the philosophical inquiry, how he finally comes to recognize the reality. That's where the two answers. Elihu and then God. Right. The last thing was v'shuv yom mechad lefnei misasva. That a person should do tshuva one day before he dies. Doesn't sound like such a stringent requirement. So, what? What does it mean, tshuva yom mechad lefnei misasva? It's based on a philosophical principle. The philosophical principle is that whatever a person does during his lifetime really doesn't matter. What matters is the state of the soul the moment before it departs from this world. That's what matters. What? See, repentance really works both ways. A person can repent from averas, a person can repent from mitzvahs too. The person did mitzvahs all his life, and before he died, he was sorry he did those mitzvahs. And he said that, why did I have to do that? I wasted my life. And a lot of people do that. I wasted my life. I went to shul. I did all these things. I could have had a good time. I shouldn't have done all these things. It was a waste of time. So he loses all the benefits. As if he never did a single mitzvah in his life. Tshuva works in both directions. Tshuva, all tshuva means really is that the soul is attached to a certain good, a certain ideal. So just like the soul could be attached to the good through tshuva, the soul could be the other reverse. Soul could be attached to evil. He changed his sorry, he did mitzvahs. Wiped out. It's as if he never did the mitzvahs. Alright? So it turns out that our whole life really is just in order that before to reach a certain state before death. Strange outlook of life. That's what all the Mefarshim say. Nobody argues in this chat. All the Mefarshim say. So it says, Shuv Yom Acha Lefnei Mesvaschei, you should do tshuva. Repent one day before you die. So they all say, Hu Eini Adeya Masa Yomas. Rambam says it. Rabbeinu Yonah says it. Everybody says that pshat. Same pshat. He doesn't know when he's going to die. Shema Hayom, Shema Lamacha. Maybe today, maybe tomorrow. V'yiyu Kol Yomav B'Shuva. And all his days he has to stand repentant. Because maybe, in other words, live each day as if it's your last.
It's a funny way to put it.
Right. Let me ask you a question. Is this really the philosophy of Yadis? Yeah. That the whole life is just a very one day? Day before death? That's the whole thing.
No,
the whole big deal, huh? Yeah?
Our
main Hashgacha really is with regard to perfection. That's the main Hashgacha. That's the main Hashgacha of Hashem. Kol abol etayar mesayin asar gemar. So the person that, wants to improve himself, so he brings about a certain Hashgacha. That's the whole Hashgacha that man has. God to man is Hashgacha with regard to his perfection. That's the essence of the Hashgacha. So, Ema speaking be at a lashav means that there is no Hashgacha with regard to his eventual tshuva. That's why he can't do it. It means there's no Hashgacha. It doesn't say that that they stop him, but Ema speaking be at a lashav. It means that he does not have any Hashgacha. But the Hashgacha that we have in life is Hashgacha with regard to perfection. Now, so my question is like this. Is that really what Yadis maintains, that that's the whole life? It's a very morbid philosophy. The whole life is the day before you die? I mean, is that it? Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. That it takes away the point system. People think they did a mitzvah, you know. They get a little check, and now they have a... Yeah, it has nothing to do with it, right? I mean, you have to, when you understand on a mature level, it makes sense. It's really the state of the soul, and the state of the soul is the important thing, and the mitzvahs are just really reflections of the state of the soul. But... Well, my question is like this. My question is, what kind of advice is this? I mean, first of all, Shuv Yom Echad Lefnei Misascha is really very difficult advice to follow. And like somebody mentioned before, what kind of a tshuva is that, Yom Echad Lefnei Misascha? I mean, you know, even if it's a tshuva, it's only a fair tshuva. It's not really a good tshuva. The Rambam says not the best tshuva, because he's afraid he's dying. So now what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to be, if it was my last day, so I'd be so sick, I'd be, you know, I'm dying, so now I do tshuva. So now what I'm supposed to imagine that this is my last day. I mean, it's a difficult advice. And besides, what about all the it's true about, let's say about tshuva. So tshuva is dependent upon Yom HaEchav. What about all the, what about Talmud Torah? You certainly can't get Talmud Torah in on the last day before he dies. That's impossible. And the essence of Olam Haba is based upon Talmud Torah. That takes a whole lifetime. That doesn't take one day. So what kind of a thing is this that the whole life is incorporated in one day before Misa? Whole life is just to see what state is going to be right before Misa. Yeah, that's a different Maimah Chazal. Yesh Tona Olam Haba Shachas, the Gemara says. Person can have Olam Haba in one hour. And the right is a Rosh Kol Yomov, and then right, you got it. The Rosh Kol Yomov, and then the last minute of Tshuva. So he has Olam Haba. It's true, but you have to realize that he has Olam Haba. But he doesn't have the Olam Haba of Rabbi Akiva. He doesn't have the Olam Haba of Rabbi Natan, Rashi. I mean, it's not the same. We're talking the main thing in life, and the essence of life is Talmud Torah. You can't say the essence of life a minute before he dies, he does Tshuva. That's the whole thing. And that's the. There is no question about it. The man does Tshuva the last minute. He really sincerely removes himself from the taivas. He's on a high level, maybe even on a higher level than if he would have been removed from the taivas all his life, because Baal Tshuva is on a higher level. But insofar as perfection of Talmud Torah and other things that he missed out in his life, there's no way you can make that up. That's impossible. can't become a Talmud Chacham. He didn't do any, he may be removed from Averis, but he can't become a Talmud Chacham. Like, like they asked the Chavetz Chaim, they said that, is it true if a person is watching a mace that he's Potter from Talmud Torah? So he says, yes, but I'll never become a Talmud Chacham that way. And what kind of advice is this? I mean, the advice to me seems very impractical. Tell a person you have to chew a gum before you die. That itself is out of the realm of his mentality. But even if it was, it would be like a strange. What am I supposed to do? I mean, the person's he's a day before he dies. Now there's an urgency because there's an urgency now. So therefore, I'm supposed to get involved in tshuva. I mean, it's not a real tshuva. Somebody asked that question before. I think it was Lev asked that question. I mean, it's not really the best tshuva. So Chazal are giving... This is supposed to be talking about Rabbi Eliezer, the highest level. So what now? I mean, I know I'm going to die, so therefore it's my last chance. So now I have to do a last chance tshuva. Now, that itself is not really a tshuva gemur. And now you're telling me that I should try to duplicate in my mind this experience every day. I mean, what are they talking about? The thing is that really in perfection there's two things in perfection. One thing in perfection is the positive. The positive, in other words, what is a person attached to? People who are perfected are attached to different objects than people who are not perfected. Their idea of the good is a different one. A person who is completely different lives, completely different value systems. And I don't mean value systems as the term is used superficially. Value system is used, it's like a person has some type of a conscience. His value. That's not the type of values I'm talking about. I'm talking about where a person really has, in his mind, sees different things. He's attached to different things. The good in his mind is clear. It's different than the average person. Now, the more chokhmah, the essence of establishing the good is through Talmud Torah. That's the whole essence of establishing the good. That's essentially what it is. Talmud Torah can make cool. So learning in Chachma really brings to the soul, to the eye of the soul, it presents it with a different good. And when the soul sees that good, it's attracted to it. There's an attraction. But simultaneously, there's another attraction. The soul is attracted simultaneously to the taivas, to the physical part, because man is a combination of both, and he's being drawn in two directions. He's being torn in two directions. That's the nature of that. That's man's nature. Now, the Rambam says in the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam says when he speaks about a great chacham, so he says, and this great chacham, he says, from the moment before he dies, reaches the highest level, right before he dies. Why does he reach the highest level before he dies? Because there's only one state in this life where the emotions and the taivas lose their draw, their attraction, and that is on Yom HaMisa. That's why it says Yom HaMisa, by the way. Because the Yom, a person always thinks in terms of the day, psychologically. Day. The day that he dies, if he knows he's dying today, it's a different emotion. Even a person who's who's going to be executed, if his execution is tomorrow or if his execution is today, it's a different emotion. It's a different thing, different emotion. So a person who knows he's dying today, it's Yom HaMisa, is in a different framework. That Yom HaMisa really, like the Rambam says, is the state in which the Chacham reaches his highest level. Because then, at that time, he becomes a unified being. Becomes unified. The good of the soul, the good that is registered on the soul, he has. And the attraction to the tangible, to the physical, to the temporal, loses its grip. The temporal loses its grip. So at that moment, he becomes a unified human being. And he reaches the highest level. That's Yom HaMisa. It's only possible in Yom HaMisa. Okay? So what Chazal say is as follows, that what prevents a person from seeing the Yom HaMisa, from recognizing that there is a Yom HaMisa, it's because of man's fantasy of immortality. But if a person did not have the fantasy of immortality, he would recognize the possibility that he might really die soon. It's possible. So, since there is such a possibility, so the possibility itself would have an effect on him that it would loosen the hold of the typhus. Just like the Yoma Misa has a psychological effect. If the person would actually not have the fantasy of immortality, you see, so that the possibility itself would loosen the hold of the typhus. And he would live all his life, really. He'd live all his life with in a way that his soul would be in a state of perfection. Because the good that he has attracts the soul, and the physical would lose its grasp, would lose its hold. So he'd be more of a complete individual throughout his life. That's what it means, v'shuv yom echad lefnei misascha. And now I don't know which day I'm going to die, which means to say, if I remove the fantasy of immortality, so then the good that the soul is attracted to could reach its full expression. It will reach its full expression by loosening the hold of the tithes. So shuv yom echad lefnei misascha really is a person's whole life. That's what it is. It's not the last day before he dies. It's all it does. The only use as a mashal. The last day before he dies is the perfect situation where he becomes a unified person, where the taivas lose their hold and all the energy goes into the real good. The person didn't have the fantasy of immortality. Every day you have it. Every day you have it. That's why they say it's every day. Yeah, we just explain something. When we say the taivas, we don't really mean the gross taivas. I mean, taivas have many forms, and they take on different shapes. Like Donnie mentioned, a person that's involved in creating an invention. So that's his whole life's goal. I mean, you have to remember what the Rambam says in Mezuzah. She'ein omeid la'olam o la'olamei olamim el yudiyas sur ha'olam. He says the only thing that has real existence is knowledge of God. Everything else besides that has no real existence. Just stems from the person's emotion. Person might be working on a great invention, but that is, it's just another emotion. If you'll trace it back, you'll find it's some type of emotion, an egocentric emotion or an emotion, even if it's an emotion to benefit humanity, but it's a type of misguided identification. It's not really based upon reality, not based upon any reality. So it's another taiva. I mean, when we say taivas, we don't just mean taivas, chilush, diya, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the taivas of different forms. We're talking about everything besides the reality. If, of course, a person is a chachma, I mean, chachma in general is all chachma solakim, that's the highest level. But, of course, a person can even be involved in chachma in the wrong way, where he has no benefit from it. A person wants to take a test. So he's studying astronomy because he wants to take a test. It has nothing to do with perceiving chachma Hashem. A person wants to be a great biologist. He wants to be famous biologist. He studied biology, and he has nothing to do with chachma Hashem, nothing whatsoever. It's only if the person... If the person through the study sees a reflection of the Creator, then he's attached to reality. If he's not attached to a source of reality, it's just another thing. It's not really chachma. It's not really chachma. So there are many different forms we're talking about of taivas. Taivas means anything besides a diyas sur olam. That's what it means. Now, what are these three things? Yes, Rabbi Eliezer had three things. One was that you should have your friends honor just like you should honor your friend just like you should. It should be the love of the honor of your friend should be as if the same as the love of your own honor. Then he has altinach lichos, shouldn't get angry, and then he has you should do tshuva the day before you die. All right. So what do you say? What do you say about that? It's three things that he's attacking. See, you have to understand, it's like Rabbeinu Yonah says, and the unfortunately, Rabbeinu Yonah especially points it out, that these three things he would say all the time. Each one said three things all the time. Why? Because every person has to work with his own nature, and he has to have certain ideas that are constantly with him, that perfect him. A kind of person should have such things set up. I mean, if he doesn't have such things set up, he's not really on a level of perfection. And these chachomim, the Mishnah tells us what they had set up. Now, really, in terms, you see, the first one, Yehi Kvod Chavercha Chavalavik Shalach, is where a person, we said, a person recognizes that honor is really honor for the human race. It's not really honor for the individual. So this really stems from a certain, it stems from a recognition which is blocked by a certain emotion. Which emotion blocks that? Each one of these is a recognition. But each recognition is blocked by a certain powerful emotion. And that's why the Chacham would always say these ideas, so that their mind would see the reality, and they would recognize that their emotion is really not in line with that reality. Which, now he's hitting three emotions in this memra. Which three emotions is he hitting? The first emotion, they stem from different parts of life. The first emotion is the emotion where a person feels that he is the favorite. He is a favorite. That's the way people feel. And many times people, religious people feel that way. I mean, but even people who aren't religious, I've read, people who are not religious still feel that way. I remember I read one time that a certain actor got a heart attack. Very powerful, physically very powerful person. And he got a heart attack. So he said, "I thought I was one of nature's favorites." Right? The idea that a person is favored, and he is God's favorite, this is really just, it's an emotion that stems from childhood. It's an infantile emotion. It's an emotion which really stems from the sibling rivalry between young children, and each one wants to be a favorite. But it's an extremely powerful emotion. I would say that's probably one of the most powerful emotions in man. Because people always do things in order to achieve that. I mean, I've seen situations where people became ill, and not that the illness was so severe, but there was an emotional reaction to the illness. What was the emotional reaction from? The illness showed that they're not really the favorite, not really God's favorite. See, how could this happen to me? How could this happen to me? That's why people say, why me? See? The point is that everybody feels, and that's why when they hear that somebody else became ill, it doesn't really affect them so much. Because that person, of course, that wasn't God's affair, naturally. But me, it's different, you see? You'll notice that people want unique things. The idea of having unique things. This is something unique. I was one time with somebody in a car, and he just got a... He just bought one of these new Seville, Cadillac Seville. So it just came out then. So he was telling me that it's a personalized car. Personalized, only about 40,000 around. But the idea is that he is somebody special. He's somebody, he's unique, he's special. He's a favorite, he's God's favorite. The idea of being a favorite is a very powerful emotion, an infantile emotion, very powerful emotion. And many things that people do are geared to satisfy that fantasy. Dressing differently, everything's unique. Everybody wants to be unique. Unique means that he places himself in a situation where he can imagine that he's something different, and he's a favorite. He's a favorite of God. That's why he said, Yehi chavod chavercha chavra lecha kishalach. When a person recognizes that his chaver, his friend's honor, should be as important as his own, that's a total breakdown of that fantasy. So that was the first one. The second one was the second. Yes. The second one was Kas. The emotion that in relationship to Kass is that he has a right to insist upon a reality that he wants. That's the emotion. Because the child, that's the emotion, it also stems from the infant state. Like you see, a child has a fit. What is a fit? A fit is an insistence that things go in accordance with the infantile wish. See? That's a second, that's a demand on reality. Demand on reality. You have to understand that when we grow up, we still retain a lot of these a lot of it in childhood. Ki Yetzalei V'Adam Ra Menura. So those are two separate emotions. And the third one is the fantasy of immortality. That's the third one. Those three things. But basically, the three things I think basically summarizes very nice most of human beings' desires. One is that his typhus should be able. One really stems from the typhus part, the kas, the anger. The anger is because he wants to have that which is in line with his wishes, the fulfillment of his wishes. That's one. Two is that he's special, that he's a favorite. And three is that he's immortal. Three is that he's immortal. A favorite is a relative thing. Favorite means is actually the ego with regard to somebody else. It's comparative. I am the favorite. The immortality is really something that is not a comparative thing. Immortality. Immortality is the emotion again. It's the egoistic emotion, but that's with regard to himself. You see. So one was the kas is really the ability to establish the taivas the way his desires the way he wants them, and the other two are fantasies of the ego. That's the way he summarized. Yeah. And he felt that those three things, if a person works on those three things, then his nature can be totally changed. Those are the three things which really summarize the human being. Yes?
I think there's a subtle relationship between the emotion of the favorite and the immortality.
Oh, well, they definitely do work together. Yeah, that's true. Because they work together. That the person fantasizes his immortality, sees somebody else dies, the favoritism takes care of that problem. It's true, they work together. But there's still two different trends. Yes? Two different expressions. Well, I want you to say something. This is an important point. When we say that to shatter the fantasy of immortality, to shatter the fantasy is not necessarily the best thing to do. It's only the best thing to do insofar as a person is attached to the good. If a person has the good, so then it's beneficial. Then it's shuv yom echad lefnei misascha. But otherwise, if a person just shatters the fantasy of immortality and winds up in depression, there's no benefit there. I mean, he's just going to harm himself. Just going on. Because a perfected person has some place to channel the energy where he's happy, but this is just a disturbance. But if really that's his whole life of the tivus, now he's going to get depressed. That's not perfection at all. Depression is not perfection. The contrary, it's worse. The shuv yom mecha lefnei misascha means what it means is to round out the attachment to the good by breaking the reality of the tivus. It's rounding off one's attachment to the good, but not that it's a morbid philosophy. It's not a morbid philosophy. It's not that Yad says imagine every day as if you're going to die. Right. The person did that, he'd never have a life, and he wouldn't be perfected either. He'd be a morbid person. The person that's depressed even if he doesn't do a veris, he says someone's depressed. That's the worst of error. So in Yad, a person has to be happy. If there's a tachas shelo positive, tachas shelo avaltem, esed Hashem v'simcha v'tuv leva. So you see that the way of Torah is supposed to make a person very happy, overjoyous, extremely happy, happier than a person that's involved in the taivas, because the enjoyment is far greater. It's a greater man is constructed in a way where the release of energy in the chachma gives him more satisfaction than anything else. There's nothing compares to it. It's exciting, the exhilaration. There's nothing you can do that can have such an enjoyment. So it makes a person happy, but there is disturbance. The taivas on the other side is disturbing. So Yom HaMisa is a situation where he loses its grip, but it's only if he has an attachment to the good. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. Just person imagine Yom HaMisa. Yes. Let me just give you the question: is how a person goes about it, how to go about perfecting yourself. Like these chachamim, they had these things. Yeah, right. How does a person perfect himself? It's true. Now he knows the idea. But how does he really remove his fantasy of immortality and his desire to change reality and his idea of himself, of his own favoritism? There are two ways that he has to do it. One way is by the recognition of the reality. The recognition of the reality through chokhmah. That's one way. But the second way also, the two ways go hand in hand. One, you might say, is more like an external way. An external way is where the person gains knowledge. Like the Rambam says, that a person should set aside time to to study Chachmas. The Ram says in the end of Hilchos Shua, that a person should set aside time to study the different Chachmas, L'das Eskono, to be L'da Eskono. So L'da Eskono means that through knowledge. Knowledge definitely has an effect on a person. So remember, one psychologist says that astronomers don't really care too much about their own personal life because they recognize there's a greater reality. That's one way. That's an important way. Through chokhmah, through chokhmah. The person studies. The more he studies, and he sees reality, he starts recognizing that these emotions that he has are completely off. They're completely off. And that the person and he starts losing faith in the emotions. That's a very important step. I mean, most people have a certain conviction that these emotions are a reality, are true. And Rishay Olam exemplify that in the highest degree. And you see, like Hitler, Yimach Shemo, towards the end, when things were getting worse, he kept on imagining they're getting better. Anything that happened, he would say, ah, you see, now we're going to be victorious. Why? Because the Russia in deep down feels, is convinced about his emotions are going to dictate the terms of reality. That's that's a part of man. That's the infantile part of man. Now, as a person grows, what happens is that that conviction starts losing its hold, and he starts realizing that he can have the most powerful emotion that this is going to be so. And in reality, it's not going to be so. Not going to be so. He's not going to make a very good... He's not going to make a very... much of a gambler. Because in gambling, that's precisely the emotion you have. The emotion of a gambler is... That's why, halachically, it's asmachta lakanya. It's not gone. Because the gambler is convinced that because he wishes, his wish, he's something special, he's different... And therefore, because he placed the bet on this thing that it's going to win. That's definitely going to happen. It's going to win. That horse is going to come through. Okay. What is that emotion? There's an example of precisely that certitude that he feels. That certitude that he feels at that moment. That emotion is the conviction that this is reality. His emotion. He really believes it. Sincere. He believes it. He feels this is the emotion is reality. That's the as a person on the contrary, and you see in Chochmah, you see that in reality the good businessman is the one that is just the opposite. That as much as people get caught up in the fantasy of the moment that this is going to be such and such, he knows that he has to be protected in all different ways. Which means he has to deal with reality. I mean, basically, he has to be in line with reality, not betting. Not bad. Betting is just an emotion. A lot of interpretations for the compulsion for gambling. What? So as a person, real growth in a person is when a person can take a look and he can see that how a while back he was really convinced about certain realities based upon his own emotions. And he could see a change, how he should pull away from these emotions which are really a part of his nature, part of his essence, part of his nature. And he could break away slowly and start recognizing what the emotion is. So the first way that he does it is by knowledge. But then it also requires a certain amount of introspection and honesty. The introspection and honesty is that, there are two possible results from a person's knowledge. If a person recognizes, for instance, reality, and he sees how far away his emotions are from reality, there's two possible things a person can do. Either the person can deny how far away his emotions are from reality. He could break off. He'll definitely break off from the emotion. But when he breaks off from the emotion, there are two directions he can take. One direction is upward, and one direction is downward. In the upward direction, what the person does is, he recognizes, yes, this emotion wasn't reality. And now, he just goes on. He goes on and considers himself improved. What he's very happy about is the fact that he's improved. But there's another direction that a person can take. And that direction is when he recognizes the emotion and that he was wrong, he turns around and rather than being ashamed of the fact that he's he was so far away from reality, he starts realizing how powerful this emotion is, that it could actually twist his mind. And he starts going into the realization of how strong and how strong the emotion was. Instead of running away, taking flight from the emotion, what he does is he turns his mind on the emotion and recognizes all the different facets of the emotion and how this emotion had such a powerful grip on his life. All its manifestations. If he does that, he'll start uncovering the tremendous hold that the emotion had on his life. Rather than running away, taking flight because he's afraid to realize how weak he was, he turns around just the opposite. And he says, just a second, this can't be a simple thing. Let me see how many other ways this emotion, how many other manifestations this emotion has, and how deeply ingrained it is in my nature. If he has the courage to do that, because it takes tremendous courage, if he has the courage to do that, then he'll really be able to loosen the grip of the emotion. And that's a powerful and painful experience. That's a difficult thing for a person to do. So you want to know how a person, what method a person should use in order to raise himself to a high level. That's the method. But it's a difficult method. Not too many mortals have been able to do that to a very great degree. But that's the only way where he actually will be able to make a change in himself, a real change in himself. If he wants to be satisfied that now he's bigger than the emotion, he'll take flight. He made a gain, a little gain, but that's it. If he really wants to change himself, he has to recognize that he just tapped the beginning of the iceberg, top of the iceberg. But he has to go down deeper and study the irrational part of his nature. Then what he'll come out with, then if he's successful, he'll come out with a statement that David HaMelech made. V'anochi tolas v'lo ish. That's the statement that'll finally come out with. V'anochi tolas v'lo ish. The last means a worm means he's dictated by the writhing of the worm is dictated by instinctual law, and that's the realization that he will come to. He'll recognize a tremendous hold, and in this recognition, strangely enough, but in this recognition, the emotion will lose its hold, and he will really be more perfected. A strange phenomenon that it looks like he's going in the opposite direction, but truth of the matter is he's really traveling in the right direction, because while he will come to realize his nature, through that realization he will loosen the grip of the emotion to the greatest degree, and will really be in a more perfected state, although he will not have the same satisfaction that he had at the beginning of being in a perfected state. That satisfaction he'll lose, but in reality he'll be in a more perfected state. He'll be losing the fantasy of imagining that he's in a perfected state for the reality of being there. But in that reality of being there, there's no satisfaction. He doesn't have the personal satisfaction that he's achieved something. On the contrary, that satisfaction is lost. Difficult, very difficult process. But it's one that's possible, yes. This is something a person can only do himself. There's no way that anybody else could do it for you, because it is intimately tied up with his personal life and the various expressions of his personal life. And it's only through the recognition of the expressions in his personal life that he could actually raise himself to a higher level. And somebody else could tell him from today till tomorrow, this is the emotion. It has no meaning. It may be a first step, it could be excellent. But in order to really make change, what he has to do is he has to recognize the manifestations of the emotions in his own personal life in various areas, and that he's the only one that has the history. He has the memory traces. If he's not backed up with memory traces, then there's no. It's not really recognition. What? See, perfection is knowledge, but it's a certain type of knowledge. It's a knowledge of the self. If he realizes and understands the emotion and precisely how it works within him and its various manifestations, then his mind is capable of dealing with it. Without that, he can't deal with it. He simply can't deal with it. So we mentioned last week the emotion of favoritism, that people feel that they are somehow or other God's favorites, and we said that the that this is a very powerful force in man, and it's responsible for a lot of many different manifestations and expressions in man. And I was thinking that there's one special phenomena which definitely is in line with that. We mentioned about the gambling and in general. I would say that in general, most people's motivation for success is not really for the material objects that they may possess, but rather the material objects are simply a manifestation or a proof that they are that favorite, that special person. And I think it was the early... Right.
That was a symbol of whether God favored him.
That's right. The symbol of wealth was a symbol of whether God favored him. The early set was in this country.
Because if he didn't make money,
it means God doesn't want you to... Right. That's right. There are many philosophies like that, and those philosophies maintain, of course, that you shouldn't help the poor, because the poor are the ones that are rejected by God, and that's it. But if you make the money, then you are God's favorite. So really, the motivation, the primary motivation in man, I would say, is this emotion that the person is special. Really, that's why it's an endless quest. It's an endless quest. Because after a certain amount of materialism, a person has enough physically. How much more could a person require? A certain limit, and that's it. The limit, the physical limit, it's true, exists. But there is no limit when it comes to the idea of being a favorite. Then there's no, that's limitless. How much of a favorite? Favorite against who? There's always competition. So therefore, that's why the quest is endless. But there's another expression of this phenomenon, and I think it's a very powerful expression. The expression of this phenomenon is in anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism. What is anti-Semitism? Why do they hate about the Jew? What do they hate about the Jew?
The chosen
people. Right? What is the chosen? Chosen means
their own.
Exactly. In order, the person, man's desire to be the favorite, you see, prevents him from his worst nightmare is that somebody else should be the favorite. Because that, of course, is exactly the opposite of what he wants. So therefore, whenever such an image sets itself up, so the person will naturally be filled with rage and hatred. And the Jew, it seems, has reaped the result, the harvest of this type of animosity. That's what one psychologist said. That's what one psychologist said, that 3,000 years ago the Jews proclaimed themselves the chosen people. And ever since then the world has acted as if they believe it. I think that's the root of the phenomenon of anti-Semitism. That's really the root of the phenomenon. The only thing I say is that the Jew sometimes helps out. Exactly. The Jew helps out. That's a problem. I don't think that the Jew is totally uninvolved in this situation. I wouldn't see, it's a question, of course, you'll say, then I'm saying that the Jew isn't blameless. I would say he's blameless in terms of the effects, because according to justice, it doesn't warrant the effects of the anti-Semitism. But he's not blameless in terms of being responsible for bringing about the emotion. See? Bring about the emotion to begin with. That's right, exactly. Their reason is not blameless. Their reason is involved. Because he is ostentatious, and he does show off, and he has to. And why do you think the Goyim make these exclusive clubs? No Jews allowed? What does that mean, no Jews allowed? What does it mean? You're not the favorite over here. We're the favorite. You're the one that's rejected. That's what the club means. We are the favorite. We're the ones that are only allowed in here because of our nature, and you're not allowed. Of course, when the Jew starts following them into these clubs with the anti-defamation leagues, and they try to make sure that they can get in and show off their cars to the Goyim, I mean, this doesn't do any good. Doesn't do any good. See, the point is that there is no doubt that the Jew himself plays a tremendous role in bringing about the anti-Semitism. I don't say you can't say that he's guilty because the punishment doesn't fit the crime, but he definitely is involved. Definitely is involved and definitely responsible to a degree. He definitely is responsible. There, I would say Chazal supplied the answer. Because Chazal say that where does anti-Semitism come from? Har Sinai. Shemishom Yodah Sino Lumos Olam. And one makes a play on the word Sinai. So that's the style of Chazal. But they mean to say, the idea is that if it wasn't for the Torah, that really this hatred wouldn't prevail. Or at least not to the degree that the phenomenon of anti-Semitism expresses. The Torah is really what the problem is, because the Torah ties the Jew directly to God, and it is a system which is a realistic system. It's a system of chachma, and what is worse is, well, the worst part about it is, it's a system which within which the Jew who knows the system is so convinced of its superiority. That the worst thing is where a person senses that the other individual is totally convinced beyond the shadow of a doubt that he is the favorite. That is the worst. That's the worst possible thing. Now, if you could, there's only two ways out of it. One way is to shake the person of that belief. That's the way. The first way you can do it. The second way is to reject the person, to write him off as some kind of nut. See, if the gypsies will go around and say they're the favorites, then fine. The American Indians will say, fine. Nobody bother them. But they write them off. But when you see a people that's an intelligent people, and that they're on a par and even superior to you in all your endeavors, and these people have an inner conviction that they're the superior people, that combination is a lethal combination. You see? Now, the Goyim, unfortunately, sensed this in the Jew, that he's impregnable to any kind of idea that would break his conviction. That's why you see, for instance, the perfect example is Luther. Luther at first wrote about the Jews, and he wrote about they're really good people, he said. The problem is that the church has mistreated them all these years. But if people would be nice to them, they definitely would be they definitely would be won over to Christianity, be won for them. So he tried to be nice to them. That didn't work. In the end, he became the worst one of the worst anti-Semites. Because he didn't realize that the Jew has an inner conviction. They used to round up the Jews and bring them into churches, force them to come into churches, and they would preach to them their Gospels and their Testament and the whole thing. And the Jews would sit there, they sit there like... they had to sit there, they were forced to sit there, work out. I mean, there'd be no... not even a dent, a scratch, nothing. Why? Because the whole thing was really an absurdity. Because the Jews, it was the Jews' Torah. The Jews had studied the Torah all these years, knew the Torah backwards and forwards. The Goyim had no concept of what the Torah is about. I mean, and they took the Jews and they're going to teach them about the Torah. I mean, it was an absurd, to the Jew, it was like a total absurdity. You're telling us about what the Torah is about? I mean, you don't even have the first concept of chokhmah with regard to the Torah. So it was an absurdity. So the Jews simply sat there and it had no effect on them. So the Goyim, however, sensed this. It was an absurd situation from the Jewish standpoint. The Goyim sensed that they're not getting anywhere. There's absolutely no reaction whatsoever. That brought on the hatred even greater. You see? But Yadus is the system that legitimized the fact that the Jews are God's favorite. And that's why, because if you just maintain you're superior, fine, you're superior. But we could say we're superior to you. What are you superior? You can make more money than we can. Fine, okay. First of all, we outnumber you in terms of the wealth. The Jews aren't really the wealthiest people. So you say per capita or whatever. But the point is, you could always be the bottle that. You could always say, fine, all right, so you're greedy people, you're after money now to make money. But there are other things. What about values? Human values? Oh, you have that too. That's your area also. There's simply, that's the area which really makes the situation one where it's impenetrable. And it presents an image of an individual who you simply, in any area, I mean, he's superior. And he maintains he's superior. This people can't tolerate, because it goes against the innate nature of man. The innate nature of man is to maintain that he is the one that is the favorite. And this emotion is broken by the image of the Jew. And you can understand why there's such tremendous hatred. Yes. By the way, I don't say that if the Jew was uninvolved in helping the situation along, that the anti-Semitism would subside. I didn't make that. Don't get me wrong on that. I mean, I didn't say that. I just said that the Jew is responsible many times for the flare, causing it to flare up. Yes. The at the center of Torah is Chachma. There's no question about that. But the center throws off to the periphery as well, and even people who aren't involved in learning a Gemara, but they always heard it around. Oh yeah, they know. Like, oh, this is a sharp idea. Like they're attuned to looking for sharp ideas, you know, and therefore in business wherever they go, they decide this concept prevailed. It was extended from the Gemara. The ideas of Gemara extended beyond the Gemara itself, extended among the whole nation, and gave them a certain appreciation of Chachma. And this appreciation makes them feel, I mean, many times that because of the fact that they're a little sharper, they're, you know, Jewish brains, and I mean, people are convinced about these things, and they express it. And this is something which Goyim can't tolerate. And it's not a proper feeling. It's a wrong feeling. The feeling itself is a wrong feeling. I mean, the only feeling that a person that is a justified feeling is Anochi of Eifer, as you know, as I'll say. I mean, that's the only feeling. But this is not this feeling. This is a certain superiority, which is not in line with reality. Yes. See, I believe that people can read other people's emotions very carefully, especially when they have the same emotions. I personally believe that there's a certain intercommunication that goes on between people that doesn't have, that is not on a verbal level. And that people sense it. People can sense it because they themselves have the same emotions, and they can sense it very quickly in somebody else. Now, the person is a great philanthropist, and you take a look and you see he has a tremendous plaque in front of the hospital. It's pretty obvious why he's being philanthropic. I mean, it's not exactly Martin Bessesa, you see. Now, therefore, when another person sees this, so what goes through his mind? Yeah, I would also like to have my name up there, permanently. Oh, that's why, sure, he wants to show me that he's a greater person than I am. I mean, there's no question about it, and as subtly as it's done, and as disguised, yeah, it's done for a good cause, and this. But at the bottom of the structure is always a little picture of the individual who's really the purpose of the whole structure. That's the way. I mean, people sense this. People know this. So Jews flaunt hospitals. It's very nice to the hospital. Real. But the fact is, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, hospitals are very important. You have to do these things. So unfortunately, you have to cater to people's egos in order to have institutions that are worthwhile and necessary for mankind. I mean, mankind moves on the basis of that. The ego moves man, but the fact is, you have to realize the repercussions are there. I mean, people sense that this great philanthropist is doing it because he wants his name there. And people know that, and his name is an intimidating feature. He's the great one. I'm not the great one, and therefore the hatred is The hatred is kindled. I mean, there's no question about it. People sense this. So the fact that Jews have great hospitals doesn't really make Goyim feel too good about the Jews. Exactly. I mean, of course, the classic case is, if you're right, the classic case is Yosef and his brothers. I mean, that's the classic case. Shonas Pasan, he's the special one. He's the favorite. I mean, you see, that's the whole partial, right? There you go. That's right. And Yaakov, the Gemara says, so Yaakov was wrong. And Yosef, of course, the way he's described, that's what it is. And that's why his father got angry at him. Avon Novo, what are you, he was telling his brothers how all these different dreams, I mean, how great he's going to be. Says his father wanted to give him an education politically. But it was too late already. But you see, I mean, that's the whole thing, that emotion. That is the most powerful emotion in men. You know, we're up to we did last week, that was those three things. Okay. Now we're up to Vavim Mischamim. Now we said another member also. Vavim Mischamim Kineged Oron Shel Chachamim. So he said that this is a separate thing altogether. This was a certain advice that he gave, and it was included here, not one of the three things that he said every day, but it was some advice that he gave, and Chazal included it. But it's a different thing altogether. All right, what did he say? He said like this. He said that you should warm yourself by the fire of the wise men, the Chachamim. And then he said, Vevizoyer begachaltan shalos sichva. You should be careful of their flame that you shouldn't get burnt. Why? Sheneshichas and neshichasuol. Their bite is the bite of a fox, and their sting is the sting of a scorpion. All their talk is like fires, coals. What is this advice? So, what is this advice? I mean, this definitely is. It's just advice. It has nothing to do with not every day. It's just advice. Okay.
Why isn't it clear?
It means the mashal is like a fire, which means that that a person should be very careful with a chacham, that he should approach him. On the one hand, he wants to benefit from the chacham. He should approach him, gain the warmth, but not draw too close. Because if he draws too close, he's going to get burned. That's the outline of what he's saying. So we'll take the Rambam's pshat. The Rambam's pshat is really in a personal way, the Rambam explains. This is what the Rambam says. Rambam says, V'akavona bezos ha-tzavohu shel malach. He says, what this means is how I'm going to explain to you. He says like this. He says that you should not, When you relate to the wise people, he says, you shouldn't be nohag al-tinag bekalas lufneim, a little bit different. He says it means you shouldn't act in front of them like levity, like you would with a friend. And v'alye libcha gaspam means that you shouldn't be haughty with them. Like, the person shouldn't be haughty with these people. Haughty means that he places himself on a par with them. Okay? Valtiskari Valayam Yosalamide says you shouldn't get too close to them. Elatiya kirvoscha lefneim vigishoscha leim adhechon sheyikar vucha. He says, but your closeness to them should be to the point where they draw you close. Vetamod bigvula shayami duchabo. You should stop at the point where they stop you. That's it. Valtosiv l'skar v'aleim, Yosef Mashiach Kervuchok. Why? Kidei shelo tafsir es machshavtam olecho, v'tehofech ahavosom l'sino, v'lo sovo echo mehem ato'elas, sh'ato makavala. He says, because if you get too close to them, he says, what's going to happen is you're going to lose their impression of you, their idea of you, and their love will be converted to hate, and you will not get the benefit from them that you're looking for. He says, the Rambam says, and as a mashal, he gave an example, a person who warms himself by a fire. so that if he stands, or if he sits at a certain distance, so he enjoys the warmth and he benefits from the fire. But if he wasn't careful and he drew close, too close, then he gets burnt. And the benefit, on the contrary, becomes a damage. Okay? That's the first part of the memory. Okay. So how do we understand that? I mean, what is it? What does it mean? In other words, the problem with the statement is, it would seem that you're placing the chacham on the same level as an ordinary individual.
He reacts to petty
emotions also. Yeah. Don't bother him, because his love will get upset. He'll throw you out, and then you won't get any benefit from him. I mean, what kind of things? He's supposed to be a chacham, he's supposed to be on a high level. Man on a high level, just because you want to befriend him a little bit. I mean, so now he throws you out and he's not going to help you anymore. And what kind of a level is this? The Rambam says, you convert their love to hate. That's what the Rambam says. It's an interesting thing. Both translations have the same thing. V'tahafoch avosam l'sino. And you're going to convert their love to hate. And then you're going to lose out. Then you lose out the benefits. I mean, the Rambam doesn't say, because he's a chacham, it's not proper to get friendly with him. That's the impropriety of the situation. The Rambam seems not to be discussing that. He seems to be saying that you're going to defeat your purpose. He's talking on a personal, selfish level to the individual that wants to gain from the chacham. And he's telling you that it's like a person next to a fire. He's foolish. He's going to burn himself, and now he's going to lose. Instead of having a gain, he's going to lose. Richard started. See, basically, I'm just going to say what both of you said together. The point is like this. You have to understand what is the nature of the chacham. If you know the personality of the chacham, then you'll understand what the memor means. See, the chacham is not a person who is completely... I mean, there are certain chacham like that. Like Moshe Rabbeinu, a person who couldn't relate to him at all. There's almost no personality. It's just the man is just a pure chachmah. His essence is chachma. So that, the memory, you don't need a memory for a person like that. Because a person like that, that's it. Moshe Rabbeinu is just Torah and there's nothing else. But it's speaking about a chacham, a person who is a chacham, but he's a chacham, he's a human being. So the person is he has human traits, and therefore he also partakes to an extent of the same things that most people do. Jokes around, friendly, he knows if he can talk to him. He's a regular person. The only thing is that insofar as he's a regular person, he does have these traits, but the point is they only go so far. The traits, the depth of these traits are very thin. See? Basically, underneath in the core of the chacham, it's a whole different attachment, which is invisible to the external person. It's not visible for the simple reason that the chacham knows that other people don't relate to it, so he keeps it to himself as a secret. And when he relates to people, he relates to them on their level, in their way, through their emotions. He also has emotions, and therefore he relates to them in the same way, the same manner as they. The only thing is that underneath, this is only the surface personality of the chacham. Whereas for the average person, that is their essence and that is their personality. For the chacham, it's only the surface, his surface personality. But underneath, there is a totally different world that he's attached to and that he's committed to. That is the serious part of his life. And the rest, the periphery is looks the same, but it's not. His relation to that type, to the personality part, aspect of his life, is a totally different one than the average person. So what the memory is saying is as follows, that the chacham, since the chacham is such a type of person, you have to be careful when you approach him, that you shouldn't make a mistake, because since his true core personality is hidden, and people don't really know what he is, they're liable to make a mistake and assume that the Chacham is the same as him. Just like you see, he enjoys talking about this now. I enjoy also. Suddenly, man's nature, that's why it says he shouldn't be Mizgoer. Mizgoer. Why does it say Mizgoer? Doesn't mean that he's going to be haughty with the Chacham. What it means is he's going to make one haughty assumption, and that is that his personality is the same as his. Same type of a thing. So therefore, by making that identification, what he's going to do is he's going to try to really get very close to the Chacham and pursue the personality aspect of the Chacham, get tied personally to the Chacham, and therefore thereby identifying with him, because he's drawn to the Chacham. It's the natural thing to be drawn to him. So the combination, the natural process of being drawn to the Chacham, plus the desire for one to assume that his personality is the same personality as the Chacham, that is a dangerous combination. Because what happens is that since he makes that mistake and he invades the Chacham's private domain, his private territory, so the Chacham will not tolerate it, because this is the area of his prized possessions. And once he sees that this is what's involved, he will have to throw him out. There'll be no choice. He will simply have to throw him out. And then his ava, whereas before he had favorable emotions towards him, because he enjoyed him, it was very nice, he was something which he enjoys. After all, the Chazal say, I mean, a person should be knowing with the brios in a pleasant manner, and he also enjoys the personality aspect of the relationship to a degree. So it was a very good situation, provided there was no invasion of the Chacham's privacy. But once he breaks through, if he goes beyond the point, that's why the Rambam says he should stop at the point where the Chacham puts it. Why stop at the point? What does it mean? It means that you should know that you don't know what really is his inner personality and to what extent he's committed to a different world. So if you go beyond that point, if you don't let him tell you, but you make the moves, then you're placing yourself in a very dangerous situation, because you're liable to invade to the point where he simply can't tolerate it and he throws you out. Now, when he throws you out, what it means is he doesn't throw you out because he hates you. That's not a personal kind of a hate. It's not because he doesn't like that you think that you're on his level. He doesn't care about that. But what it means is that he came to a point where it's a matter of him giving up what the real good is for you. He's not going to do that. He's not going to do that, and he's not supposed to do that. Because the Chacham who's attached to the real good is obligated to spend his life in the good, never to sacrifice the real good for anybody, because he can't. If he sacrifices it for somebody, on the contrary, he'll be doing more harm to people by doing that. Because if the Chacham, insofar as the Chacham is attached to the good, it is good for him personally, and it is good for the rest of the world. Because since he's attached to the good, so therefore he can give out the ideas which, the true ideas which help other people. So insofar as that sacrifice is concerned, that would be a criminal sacrifice on his part. So the Chacham has no choice but to simply throw out, evict such an individual from his private life. And therefore, that's what it says. That's why it's like a fire. It means that you have to know you're attracted, a person's attracted to a fire, but there's two things. There's the attraction, but then there's also the danger. So that's why really a person, when he sits by a fire, it's a compromise situation. It's a compromise between attraction and between harm. So he must place himself at a certain distance. Over here, it's the same exact phenomenon. That's what the Rambam means. Doesn't mean that it's a personal thing. Chacham is not personal. Oh, but that's what's going to happen. He has to do it. He has no choice. So that's why it says it's a dangerous thing. I would say that it's both. It's two things. It's time-wise, but it's not just the time. But it's also the involvement. In other words, the Chacham has his own private world, and if you invade that world, either time-wise, or else if you invade it in terms of the ideas that you're discussing, which he's not interested in being involved in, you see, then you're in a dangerous area. That's why, that's the proper relationship to the Chacham. See, what Chazal is saying, is that the Chacham is different internally. He's structured different internally. So you cannot go by the surface personality. His surface personality is only skin deep. It does not penetrate very deeply. And if you invade beyond that personality, then you're in danger.
But how do you invade?
You're invading his personal life. That's what I mean. You're invading his personal life. The hatred of the Chacham is a different kind of a hatred. That's why I mentioned that many times. Yesterday at Parsha Zohar. Insofar as a person can hate evil, in order to love the good, you have to hate evil. It's two sides of one coin. That's why you have Parsha Zohar. You have the mitzvah of hating Amalek. Sin is a mitzvah in Yadus. So it's both sides of the coin. If you love the good, you have to hate evil. You have to hate evil, not like the Goyim say, religion of love. No, our religion, we have Parsha Zohar, it's a religion of hate. We hate evil. If we love the good, we hate evil. So it's both two sides of one coin. I mean, the Chacham has to, insofar as he loves the good, he has to hate evil. Don't become an object of his hatred towards evil. That's what it means. Don't become an object of his sinner. His sinner is a sinner of waste of time. It's in the sin of not gaining true ideas. That's what he hates. So don't become tied up with that hatred. That's what it means. That's a different kind of hatred. It's not the hatred. It's the sin of a Chacham. The sin of a Chacham is not personal sin. It's not a personal sin. It doesn't say it's not haughtiness alone. Haughtiness and getting close. Why? Because getting close, really, the getting close is tied in with two things. It's tied in with a desire to be with the Chacham, that's one, and also a certain haughtiness in which he wants to assume that he has he wants to identify his personality with the Chacham. That's the dangerous thing. He wants to assume he has the same personality. That's the haughtiness, and the other one is the desire to get close. These two, this combination is a dangerous combination. That could lead to an invasion of the Chacham's domain, where the Chacham will reject him and throw him out altogether. So he will lose out. Okay? And once he throws him out, he's not going to take him back. Why should he? The other people, he doesn't have to deal with him. Who is he? Well, let's say, for instance, even a Chacham, let's say somebody go over to the Rav every day and start bothering with Shaila for 2 hours. I mean, will the Rav throw him out? What? Right.
No, but I mean...
Yeah. Why? If you say that the Rav is wrong about this? No, he's right. This person, you have to pursue your Chachma. Yeah, but you can't be an idiot in pursuing your Chachma. Yeah. The man has more obligations than just answering your nonsensical question. So therefore, he has more important things to do. So therefore, throw him out. He has other obligations to call Yisrael. You're not the only one in the world. So he has to deal with it in a rational way based upon what the situation that's in front of him. So it's very nice to have a desire for Chachma, but if you want to be successful in achieving the Chachma, you have to go about it in a very expedient fashion. All the Chazal is saying that a person has to be very wise in his zeal for knowledge. He has to be practical about it. The Chacham has other things that he has to be involved with. He has to be practical about it. If he has a tremendous zeal for knowledge, yes, it shouldn't be misguided. He should do it in a way that's going to be beneficial to him. It's a practical idea. That's true. The thing with why you have the memory is because most people who are not Chachamim don't really know what the Chacham is. So that's why Chazal had to inform you in advance that even though you're not on a level, you should know to begin with that you're dealing with somebody that's different. And you shouldn't make any mistake and harm yourself and lose the benefit. That's what the Chazal are trying to do. They want the person to gain the benefit. Steve brought up a good point. I mean, no doubt that Steve mentioned that you have to, that there's another thing here, that you have to take into consideration also the personality of the Chacham. I mean, that's true, the personality of the Chacham. The Chazal can't spell out every point over here. They're just giving you a basic idea. They're giving you basic advice. But you have to take into consideration the personality of the Chacham. It's true, for certain people, certain Chacham, you know that he has a certain type of personality, so you have to know that him you can't deal with the same way as another Chacham. I mean, you have to be able to size up the personality of the Chacham and realize that certain if he has a certain different type of personality, invading his privacy would be on a different level. It'd be a different type of activities. You have to know who the Rebbe is. I mean, the Rav and Rav Moshe are two Gedolim, but they're two different personalities. No, each one you have to know according to how far you can go with them. It's a different type of thing. You're right. You have to be able to assess the personality of the Chacham to know what type of a thing is considered an intrusion and is liable to lead you to getting back. Right. I mean, there's no doubt about it. That's a good point. Good point. Yeah, what Neil mentioned is true. You can't go by the surface personality. Because that's true. Can't go as he will tolerate you, won't throw you out. It could be he's a nice guy, but inside, meantime, he can't stand you. He can't wait till you leave. That's true. You're right about it. Yeah, it's a totally different thing than the case with Shammai, where the guy came to him. That wasn't an invasion of Shammai's personal domain. He asked him one question. The Chacham has to be available for questions. It was a type of question. It's a different thing altogether. So Chazal, who in Pirkei Avos, they're really giving you the basics of how a person can make strides, make headway in terms of ethical perfection. So what they do is they give you certain ideas of how to deal in every area. One of the areas of Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham, you have to look at rationally. I mean, it's a phenomenon that you have to look at rationally, like anything else. You can't just say, oh, Talmud Chacham, I'm going to go with the Talmud Chacham. It's also crazy. You have to be very rational in everything you do, and with the Talmud Chacham, you have to be rational too. So you have to know how to approach him from a rational standpoint, like the Gemara says, for instance, in Pesachim, the Gemara says that if an Am Haaretz is nice to you, run away from them. If the Talmud Chacham is mean to you, and he embarrasses you, and he upsets you, stay, stick by him. The Gemara says. Why? Because you're better off this way. Better off. See, Chazal try to, you have to be, you're not supposed to look at a Talmud Chacham. What I'm trying to say is that Chazal didn't want a person to look at a Talmud Chacham like just a mystical phenomena. See, Reb Moshe Feinstein, a mystical phenomena, I have to become attached to that phenomena. It's like a psychological mishigash, a psychological aberration. Everything must be approached with Chacham. A Talmud Chacham is a phenomena. So he's a phenomena within the realm of your life. Now, the whole purpose of Yadis is to gain from every phenomena that surrounds you in order that you should improve your level. I mean, that's the purpose. So the Talmud Chacham has to be viewed rationally too. What is he? Let's understand him. And how do we gain from him? It has to be approached with Chachma. Not just he wants to attract it from Talmud Chacham. You're going to be saved by being attracted to the Talmud Chacham. That's not an approach of Seichel. That's the approach of Seichel. So Chazal give you here the way that you'll most get benefit from Talmud Chacham. It's practical advice. Talmud Chacham has to be looked at as a practical phenomena. And how do you gain from it? So they say that you should be careful not to overstep your bounds, because then he'll get angry at you, he'll reject you. Once he rejects you, then you're not going to gain any more from him. That's it. I mean, that's the way it is. The Talmud Chacham has a lot of people that surround him and try to gain from him. And if you're going to lose your position, you'll be the one who loses that. So use practical seichel in your approach. Don't be overcome by some emotion and you're going to lose out. But look at it practically. That's really the essence of the Chazal. Now, the last part, it says that what would be bad is that the Talmud Chacham rejects you as bad. So it says like this: Vosif lahafkid mizev amar. He says, Al tachsha, you shouldn't think she'im yishtuos chadul shonam tachsha v'tirmos on medvarim yisrama. Don't think that you'll be able to fool them. You'll be able to fool the Talmud Chacham. He says, in other words, let's say you overstep your bounds, so you'll appease him later. So he'll forgive you. No, he's not that nice. See? Ela'ena mekablam lachash. Kemo shein asarf mekablo. Kemo shenema ashele yishma lekol malachashim. He says they don't accept appeasement. Talmud Chacham doesn't accept appeasement. See? What does it mean? What does it mean? It doesn't mean, actually, there's two Lashonas here. There's Kapok's translation, and then there's the original. I shouldn't say the original. I don't know how. It's unoriginal, actually. Yeah, the other one, there are a lot of mistakes. But it doesn't mean that he won't. They used appeasement in the Ibn Tibbon's translation. But it's not really appeasement. Of course, I mean, Talmud Chacham is not a vicious person. You can't explain, he made a mistake, he'll forgive you. He's not a hard person. But what it means is that you can't fool him. That's the Lashon, really. You shouldn't think that you could dupe him into thinking something that isn't so. See? Now, why can't you do that? Why can't you do that? So there's two reasons why you can't do it. One reason is that the Talmud, one reason is a person is willing to accept appeasement for two reasons. One reason is because simply it's beneficial to him. It's beneficial. He needs you. Since he needs you, so he wants to accept appeasement. So like business partners. I mean, a man might do something that's dishonest towards his partner, but the partner needs him. I mean, so now he's happy to hear some excuse. He really, because it's part of his need. So a person usually who is fooled usually is fools himself. It satisfies a certain need. So first of all, that doesn't apply by the Talmud Chacham, because the Talmud Chacham is really a very independent person. Why is the Talmud Chacham an independent person? For a very simple reason. Because all our dependencies, all the dependencies that we have, really stem from the fact that we are not in line with reality. See? If we were in line with reality, we would be very free and we would be very secure. See? And very independent. What happens is like this, that since a person can't, it's an interesting thing, but a person tries to become independent. How does he try to become independent? He tries to become independent by catering to the fantasy that's going to give him the independence. In other words, first he accepts the fact that he requires X, Y, Z. Okay? Then he tries to achieve those objectives in order to become independent. But the truth of the matter is that those very objectives that he's trying to achieve aren't real objectives, but they stem from a distortion of reality because of his inner inability to perceive what his real needs are. So the truth of the matter is that the more that he proceeds on that track, the more insecure he becomes, because he never really hits what he really needs. See? So he builds up, so he's still, by catering to those things instead of uprooting them, he's constantly dependent. All right? Let me explain it a little bit. What it means is like this. You see, a person has a certain insecurity, and basic insecurity, because according to the way he emotionally perceives himself, the world doesn't really satisfy his emotional needs. So let us say, for instance, with regard to his, he feels insecure. The reason why he feels insecure is because the truth of the matter is that reality, if you look at stark reality, he'd be shattered. He couldn't stand the idea that he's going to die in a few years and then he might face a lengthy illness or deteriorate. He can't tolerate these ideas. So he takes a look at an accident. He says, well, if I have a lot of money, then I could always get the best doctors. So that'll alleviate some of it. So therefore he tries to achieve a certain amount of wealth. Or else he has a certain amount of inherent insecurity. He feels that people will abandon him. So he'll be nice to his family, have a very large family. So therefore he will cater to that and say, I'll get older, my kids will take care of me, things like that. These ideas. But the truth of the matter is that as much as he keeps going in that direction, he's never satisfied. Because the truth of the matter is that at the bottom of the line, there is no security. It doesn't exist. In the end, no matter what the person accumulates, and no matter how many things he surrounds himself with, he is, in fact, alone, and a person really is alone, and he dies alone. And there's no way to get around it. There's no one that could help him out of that situation. So therefore, the more he goes and tries to conquer the insecurities, the more he's catering to the emotion. And since the emotion can never be satisfied in reality, he's always grounded in insecurity. So therefore, he's always subject to appeasement. Because even the greatest king, no matter how independent he thinks he is, but he must have his subjects. I mean, without the subject, there's no kingdom. So he's really dependent on the subject. He may not be dependent on an individual, particular subject, but he's dependent on the subjects as a whole. And any person who has, no matter what he has, is always dependent on something or some people in order to maintain his security. I mean, he can't be, total independence is impossible. So, therefore, Therefore, the person is always subject to a kiss. You can give him something. You can give a great king something. Even people who are great rulers, a little honor many times, even from a chacham or something that they desire very much. You see, so a person is always inherently dependent, no matter what he has. But the chacham is an individual who has come to grips with reality and who is able to have his emotional life conform to what reality is, and he's very satisfied with his lot in life. So instead of trying to follow fantasies which would cover up and would be a false type of protection against insecurity, he has come to grips straight, face to face, with these insecurities, and he's accepted that. Now, the truth of the matter is, like the Rambam says in the Mora, the way God created this world, he created it in a way that the Chacham can live very nicely. Because he says, the way the Rambam says, he says the greatest necessity is air, and that's something which doesn't cost a person anything. The next necessity is water. Water is found all over. Then bread doesn't really require that much. Clothing, the minimal clothing that's required, you see, is very little. So the Chacham is a person whose essence is attached really to the good, which is the world of Chachma. So all his emotions, his energy goes into that area. Now the other things are simply means. Now the means are really very small. So there's no need for all this extra baggage. There's no need for it. So the Chacham is the person who is the real secure person. He's the person who is the real secure person. He feels secure because he's content with his lot in reality. He's not trying to cover up these fantasy insecurities. And the things that he needs are very small for his happiness. He's very happy with a little amount. Like the Rambam says, that the Rambam mentions in one of his writings, I think it's in one of his medical writings, says the real Chacham is very happy with small, is happy with having his necessities. In other words, he's not looking for anything beyond that, because his essence is tied up, is involved in higher areas of enjoyment. It's not a rachmonis on it. He's happier. He's happier than, much, much happier. It's a rachmonis on the other people. He's much, much happier than the other one. So therefore, there's nothing that you could tempt him with. And therefore, he's not going to be, you can't appease him because of that. That's the first thing. Then the Rambam cites the case of Gehazi. The story with Gehazi. What was the story with Gehazi? The story with Gehazi was that Naaman, who was the Tsar Tzavor, Aram? So he had leprosy. So he heard about Elisha. He heard about the prophet Elisha. And he went to Elisha to ask him how to cure Tsaras. So Elisha told him, he says, why don't you jump into the Yarden 7 times and you'll be cured. So he said to his subject, he said, what kind of nonsense is that? He says, all the waters of Damascus are much better than the waters of the Yarden. So this is absolutely nonsensical. So his subject said to him, look, if the Navi would tell you to do a great thing, you're in such pain. If he tell you to do a great thing, wouldn't you do it? It's a small thing, so do it. So he jumped into the Yarden, and he was cured. So, 7 times he was cured. So then he came to Elisha and he thanked him profusely. He told him, this is how wonderful this is, and anything I could do. And he left his Avodah Zarah. He says the Avodah Zarah is worthless, and he apologized to him for the Avodah Zarah. He says, and that's it. He sees that this is really, this is the true religion, isn't it? And he went on his way. So Gehazi was the servant of Elisha. So at the time when Elisha met with Naaman, so Naaman said to him, what could I do for you? Let me get you something, give you something. After all, he's the captain of the forces of Aram, so he could have gotten him anything. So he refused. He kept on insisting that he should give him something, some material remuneration. Wouldn't take it. Elisha would not take it. So after Naaman left, so Gehazi said to himself, he said, this is a little bit nonsensical, overdoing it. After all, this is a good time for the nation. So
He's a good executive director. He sees the opportunity. It's the time to push the man. So he ran after Naaman. And Naaman saw him running after him. He turned around and he stopped. He said, "What do you want?" So he said, "It would be a good idea now to give a little something. For the perpetuation of Torah. After all, you recognize how valuable it is." "So, sure, what do you want?" So he took from him. So then he came back to Elisha. So Elisha said, "Where did you run and where did you go over there?" So he tried to deny it. So Elisha said, "No." He says, wasn't my heart there with you when you took this such and such from him?" And he couldn't answer him. And then he said, "And now you will be cursed with the tzaras of Naaman, with the leprosy of Naaman, you and your children." So that was the story with Gehazi. So what does the Rambam cite that incident? What does he want to show? He wanted to show two things. Actually, one is, of course, that Elisha couldn't be appeased, number one. But there's another thing there. What's the other thing? The other thing is, one was that he couldn't be appeased, but there was a second point as well. Second point was that he couldn't fool Elisha. He tried to fool Elisha. He couldn't. Now, what the Rambam is saying is that the Chacham knows the nature of the person who is not the Chacham. Because since he has Chachma, he has knowledge, so he knows what type, he knows the nature of man. And he knew, Elisha knew Gehazi. He knew him. And there was nothing that he could say that could fool him. Because the person who is the Chacham is in the world of reality, and he looks at other people based upon a knowledge of their psychological forces. He understands them, you see. That's another reason why he can't be fooled. One reason is the gavra is not subject to appeasement, but there's another reason also. The other reason is because of the objective view that he can maintain of people that surround him. You see. One of the reasons why people are capable of being fooled is because they themselves don't really have a knowledge of objective reality. So they themselves are constantly fooling themselves. They don't have any knowledge of their own emotion. So if you hit them on the right emotion, you could fool them. Usually, if it's a flattering thing, a flattering emotion usually works. Because that area people tend to believe very much. See? So you could work on their emotion. But a person who is objective, who is in the world of reality, doesn't have any delusions about himself, and doesn't fool himself, it's impossible for you to fool him. You can't fool him because he has an accurate knowledge of man, and he knows you very well, and he has an eye on reality. So there's no way that you could penetrate him in order to distort his vision. And once he sees the reality, he sees the way you are, and he sees your fault, then there's nothing you can do anymore. Impossible. Not subject to appeasement. People who are subject to appeasement is because their emotions go on a roller coaster. So one day they feel this way, next day they feel the other way. So if you hit them again today, go back there tomorrow, you'll figure out some way how to reach his emotion. And it works. It works. Sometimes a person has to do that. Yaakov did that with Esau. He reached him on a certain emotional plane. He was hoping that he was going to be in that state. And he worked it properly. And Esau was very happy, kissed him, walked away, everything was fine. But a Chacham, you can't fool that way. Because a Chacham has his eye on reality. The eye on reality is you're not going to be able to... he's not subject to changing emotions. And he knows your emotions. And there's absolutely no way that you can change them. There's just no way. So therefore, short of actually changing your nature and demonstrating that a change has occurred in your nature, there is no appeasement. So in a sense, the Chacham is a very, very tough person. He's much harder to deal with than the average person. He's a more difficult person to deal with. That's why some people thought, a lot of times they didn't like Gedolim. People didn't like Gedolim, didn't like Chazal. It goes all the way back. Why didn't they like them? For that reason. Because they found them to be individuals that were not subject to appeasement and not subject to compromise.